Jupiter Broadcasting presents this program in stereo, where available. This episode brought to you in part by GoDaddy.com.
This week on the Linux Action Show. With the recent change in owners, OpenOffice has come under a full FUD attack from Microsoft. We break down what Microsoft got so wrong and hook you up with the information you need to empower you to make the switch. Then, we share our thoughts on Google TV, Linux's growth in business, and dual booting the N900. Plus so much more. Oh, this week on the Linux Action Show. And welcome to Linux Action Show, Season 14, Episode 2. My name is Brian, that guy over there in the awesome blue shirt that's just a little too small. That guy is Chris.
Hey, Brian. The Sony TVs will soon run Linux. Actually, a generation of them.
Run the Google TV thing,
yeah,
right?
Which is essentially
it's
on
Android.
Top of Linux. Yeah.
Yeah.
But I like to give it... Because, you know, if I give it to TiVo and I give it to Replay, and they all kind of ran incarnations of Linux in a sense. They maybe ran what you could argue a truer Linux, but it's still Linux.
You know, not by much. I mean, there's really not that big a difference. I mean, it's running Linux as a kernel with lots of Linuxy drivers, and then on top of it runs, a Linux machine, a virtual machine that runs Java.
So have you seen this hardware? Cool. Have you seen this Google TV stuff?
Dude, it is awesome looking.
And what do you think? You like it?
Huh? I love it. You know what I love most about it? That remote control that Sony has. Scroll up a little bit.
I have, I think, a big glare.
There it is.
Look at that sucker.
Oh, my goodness in heaven.
Huge. For those of you listening to the audio version, it sort of looks like the combination. You take the bottom part of a Speak and Spell, and you put a PlayStation 3 controller on the top, but with more TV functions.
Yeah.
And you've got this remote control.
It looks so great.
It's about as big as that. So there's a lot of buttons going on here. But what they managed to incorporate in a handheld device is a complete QWERTY keyboard.
Complete.
You've got... Looks like pretty decent navigational controls, almost like doggle dial type things. And
and the full TV stuff, multiple on-off. It's awesome, and it's all programmable, so you can also control, you know, all the rest of your appliances with it, your receiver, your TV, and everything. Mm-hmm. So cool. I honestly was pretty on the fence about the whole Google TV thing until I saw the Sony remote.
I've heard that one downside is that because of the actual physical size of the object, you can't one-handedly reach the volume controls and stuff like that. Which would be nice for the TV aspect of it.
Yeah.
But you can still use... I mean, this is not a good solution. But I do it already, so it wouldn't be that big of a deal for me. I have, like, my TV remote, and I have my TiVo remote.
Oh, gotcha,
and so sometimes, like, I need to do something on TV anyways that the TiVo remote just doesn't do. So if I wanted volume control, I could just keep that remote already.
Yeah, so you have two remotes.
Yeah, so I don't feel like that's a really big deal.
See, and currently, you know, I do most of my TV watching on my console. So I keep a standard video game console.
Right.
Controller and that's not really handable either. Yep, so I'm already used to it.
I'm pretty much always on the PS3 these days for my network playback.
Yeah, that's what I'm doing too.
I pulled up some of the specs here because I thought maybe people in the audience might like to know some of the nitty gritty details. One of the things I found interesting is that the hardware specs of both the Sony Internet TV devices and Logitech's Review Google TV device, essentially the same exact hardware internally. Interestingly, also probably because these are first launch items, they want to keep the differences to a minimum. So that makes sense. It's got a 1.2 gigahertz Atom processor. No, that's pretty good. You know, you figure a lot of phones right now are 1 gigahertz.
That's not bad. I mean, that's not a whole lot slower than my tablet. My tablet does all sorts of crazy stuff. Plays back HD video fine.
But this is x86. The 1 gigahertz Hummingbird processors and all the other Android devices are ARM processors.
No, but I mean, like, my tablet's an
Atom. I know, but I'm just saying this is a first major consumer Android device running on the Atom CPU.
Yeah, that's true.
Interesting. Not sure what... Because I think even, like, the Samsung Galaxy Tab, which is finally starting to ship, is ARM. So,
is that ARM also?
I think this is... I don't know.
It doesn't matter. It's all Java.
It's got one of the Power VR CPUs in it, so...
That's awesome.
It's got pretty good horsepower. I mean, if anybody out there has one of these Google TV devices or gets their hands on one, I'd love to hear comments.
I would too.
I'd like to hear what you think, because I would consider it. One of the things I'm not clear on, and if anybody knows the details, can it play network video? Can it connect to like a Samba server
and play Xvids and MKVs? And all those other formats
Or is it only online stuff or stuff off the TV broadcast?
Yeah. Yeah,
that would be kind of a killer for me.
Right now, I'm looking at things like the Boxy Box. The Boxy Box seems like it does all of what I want the Google TV to do, plus some. So if I could find out that Google TV stuff did all those Boxy Box things, all the Xvids and whatnots, man, I would be happy.
Well, the Boxy Box does.
But I know, that's what I'm saying. If the Google TV did that, then I'd have multiple options.
Now, I thought I would say a little bit of a delayed apologies or early apologies for a delayed review. We're not going to have the Arch and the other reviews that we had planned lined up.
Okay, why are we not having the Arch review, Chris?
Well, Brian, I got kind of sick this week, and I didn't get a chance to install it.
You know what?
He did
get pretty sick.
I did.
You know,
I'm embarrassed, but I really intended to get it installed this week, and I really wanted to try it.
He's been sick. I was going to give him a hard time. You guys know.
I'm sorry, everyone.
I look at this guy. I'm like, he failed. I'm going to beat the crap out of him. I'm going to take him down a notch or two. But realistically, he got sick.
I thought,
it's real.
Here's what happened. It was a bad idea.
Some slack, you know?
See, I was going around. And I thought, you know what I need? I need a stomach infection. So I went out, picked myself up an adorable stomach infection, went in and got all infected. And it's been going on for a little while, but it's gotten worse recently.
Yeah.
And
I shot stoked yesterday, and then
was probably up for a couple hours after that, and then went to bed like at 6:30 at night. I was not feeling good.
Dude, that's hardcore.
So
6:30 at night.
I know.
You know someone's really sick when they actually go to bed at 6:30.
Yeah. Dude. So we're not going to do the Arch Linux review this week, so that way I get some time to play with it. And I'm going to hopefully try to get on that now that I'm feeling a little better, like probably tomorrow or something. So,
dude.
I don't know.
Hardcore.
I know, right?
If it helps any. I'm running it.
Yeah?
Yeah.
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 All right, well, don't say anything yet.
I'm not going to say anything about what I think of Arch.
I know.
Until Chris has had a chance to run it. I don't want to color Chris's impression.
The Dalek there in the chat room has essentially solved my stomach infection. This is amazing. I mean, I don't know why. Why'd I even bother going to the doctor and get diagnosed with like blood work, if I could just go to my chat room here?
Oh.
Chat room says just stop eating crappy food.
Oh.
Well, there you go.
Stop eating crappy food, Chris.
Yeah, and you have 8 people in your BBS that you haven't announced yet. So that's awesome.
Oh, guys. Yeah, so I'll be talking about this a little bit later, but I mentioned it on a previous show.
Yeah.
So I've got my little Triple E 900, right?
Yeah.
It runs a Celeron 900 processor
that was the first netbook, dude.
Continually downclocked to was it like 600 and something megahertz?
Yeah, right.
Like
it's, right. Using the speed step, it's almost essentially 600 megahertz.
It's pitiful, right?
Yeah.
Like, so this isn't technically the first netbook. The first one was the Triple E 701.
Oh, this is your...
This is the upgraded one that is the same as the original, except the screen is larger.
The 901.
With the same resolution.
Right? 901?
The 901.
Yeah.
So, just the 900.
Oh, okay.
So it's the one that people don't want that much. Like, it's the slow version. So I've got that. I'm not going to use it for anything else, right?
Right.
So I've loaded it up with a multi-line BBS. An old school one. Like, we're talking old school, late 80s, early 90s BBS.
You were like, hey, if I'm going to do this, I might as well do this.
Yeah, yeah.
So you went like the DOS box and wine route?
Oh, yeah.
That?
Oh, yeah.
Wow.
It's hardcore. And, man, I tell you, it tells me how far we've come technologically. Because this is stuff. I ran a BBS when I was in high school, right?
Yeah.
It had one line with a slow as hell modem that people called into. I remember when I got my first 14.4 modem, I was like, oh, my gosh.
Mm-hmm.
What couldn't I do with this blazing speed? Because it ran on 2400 bucks.
Did you ever run into the situation where it was your only modem?
Oh, yeah.
And so you're like, well, now I can't get online.
Yeah, so I had to take there wasn't an online for me back then.
Yeah,
it was just, I couldn't call other
BBSs. Exactly, that's what I mean, yeah.
Or Prodigy.
Yes.
Or CompuServe.
Right.
It was pretty exciting times back then. So I had this one system.
Yeah.
That's all it could do. Now I've got a netbook with a solid state disk that's running 8 lines with no slowdown. It is
not even on its original operating system.
No, it's emulating the operating system
and taking connections over TCP/IP over.
Taking connections over Telnet, mapping them using a fossil driver into pretending that it's on COM ports.
Wow,
because the old door games it's running.
Yeah,
don't communicate over Telnet.
Right,
it is.
I hadn't thought of that last part. That's funny. Yeah, that's pretty cool.
So I know I'm
that's
running
a pretty
that.
Good farting around project.
It's a great farting around project.
I thought about
getting a GoDaddy server and putting it up there.
You could,
and because it's cheap. Because if I went to GoDaddy.com right now,
probably.
And registered a domain, that'd be cheap.
Yeah,
because I could just type in Linux, and then I'd get
You'd save some cash.
I'd save like 10%. It's great.
Yeah.
And then if I wanted to get some Linux hosting, that would be cheap too. I mean, because come on, for BBS you don't need much, so you're gonna get cheap hosting, and then you're gonna type in Linux 2.0, and you're gonna save 20%
Linux
on that hosting.
20, Brian.
Yeah, that's just so much savings you can get over at GoDaddy.com with GoDaddy's new GoDaddy girl.
Yeah, not Danica anymore.
Not Danica Patrick. So this person. But the great thing is, GoDaddy offers amazing domain registration and servers. You know what?
You know
that's
what
you use
Can
them
I just
for.
Make this?
You go there, you use that, you type the code.
We will say, okay, end of advertisement. Now, I will say this legitimately as Chris, the tech person. We have, Brian and I, several different servers that are in other server facilities, mostly because they've been around for ages, and they're much, much more expensive per month.
Much.
Now, honestly, those have been down way more than any of our GoDaddy stuff.
Way more.
And the GoDaddy stuff is way cheaper.
Way cheaper.
And the one that we're talking about is a big name.
And the only reason we haven't moved away from it is pure laziness. Because it's so... The problem is, it would take so much work. We literally would have to say, okay,
all
right, we need to sit down and spend like 5 days backing up, rebuilding over here in an identical configuration, and then... There's still the possibility of us being down for a few days. And, you know,
it's been one of these things that we know we have to get to, but yeah, that's a long
story. We should do it like over like Christmas break or something.
Maybe we should make an episode out of it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know what we should
do? Finally get us to do
it. We should put up a live stream and have everyone watch us banging our head against the wall while we're trying to get our server.
And I can take the highlights of that and we can make a segment out of it.
Yeah, that actually sounds kind of fun.
All right, Brian, I've got an Android pick for this week's episode that I'm really excited about.
Lay it on me.
Now, I am a huge Evernote user, which has always stung because it means that on Linux, I don't get a true native client.
It's hurtful. I mean, I'm
hurtful,
the same
Brian.
Way. I got my little N900. I got this little Qvernote, basically.
Oh, really?
This little QT application someone built that syncs to Evernote. Does a great
That's
job.
That's not bad.
But it's not the official Evernote client.
Right, and so the Android version of Evernote's been around for a while. Evernote's usually really good about that. I think they have a BlackBerry version, and you know they have maybe even a WebOS version. I'm not positive, but the Android version has lacked a little extra punch.
Yeah,
it's been good. It's done the basic needs, but one thing it's missed that I have really really been looking forward to is offline note syncing.
Mm.
Just in that situation when you have your phone and you just want to be able to check the notes on your phone that you've already entered, but you, for whatever reason, don't have internet connection. The thing they're adding now with Evernote 2.0 beta for Android, which is my Android pick this week, is offline note syncing.
Oh, that's cool.
Also, a new polished UI. And I've personally noticed this just seems to be much faster. Now, the first initial sync, because I have a pretty large Evernote database, does take quite a while. So be on Wi-Fi when you do that, and make sure you got some battery. But after that, snappy, Brian. I think it must go through, and I know.
You got excited about that one.
So snappy, Brian. I don't know if it goes through and like they swapped out the database backend or what, but it's nice. I like it.
Holy moly.
It's got some gas, Brian.
Oh, I love gas.
Now, it is a beta, fantastic. Though, you guys. So make a backup copy of your S before you use this. Oh, actually, they list dramatically faster as one of the features. Well, that's cool. Oh, they also say use your Wi-Fi. See? I'm in sync with these guys.
Wow, you know, dude.
I just grabbed it. I noticed it. And so I put all of these different picks and all the different show notes in my BuzzFeed. And I noticed that one of the guys in my BuzzFeed, Ben in there, said, Evernote 2.0. I went and grabbed that. He said, it's out. You got to check it out. Download it, installed it, been using it for a couple of days, loves it, you guys, so go check out Evernote 2.0. In the show notes, I got a link for you. And then also, an honorable mention goes out to Angry Birds, simply because it's free.
I do like free.
Yeah, free is awesome.
Free is great.
And also, a congrats to the Angry Birds guys, because they tweeted out the other day that they surpassed 1 million downloads in their first day of being on Android.
1 million.
Did you hear what happened here? They tried to do an exclusive with one of the alternative Android app stores, GitJar.
Yeah.
And GitJar was just crushed by the traffic. So really? They and they were given away for free on GitJar. It's kind of like this exclusive thing. GitJar got slammed. So they said, all right, we'll put it out on the Google Market for free too. So then they put it on this. So you can now just search Google Marketplace on your Android device.
That's
and
so
you can get
awesome.
It.
That's so awesome.
All right, Brian.
I love that.
Let's do the news.
What's new in the news this week?
All right, Brian. Our top story on the news docket is one of the ones that I'd love to feature, dude. Linux has seen significant growth in businesses.
Well, that's good.
Yeah. Yeah, Brian, it actually is actually really good news. The Linux Foundation did a survey, and they showed that 80% of the companies that they surveyed were adding more Linux relative to other operating systems in the next year, 5 years. And their plans, they're going to be deploying more Linux than any other operating system.
Huh.
So think about that in your face. Overall, the survey...
thinking about that in my face right,
right
now.
I'll check this out. This is great for the Linux Action Show. Also, the survey indicated that Linux is becoming more mission-critical in the enterprise and more strategic to the chief information officers.
Of course it is.
Yeah. Now, see why that's good for the Linux Action Show? I don't know. More Linux
you know,
seems
you
good.
You know why part of this is happening?
Hmm.
The super awesome nerds are now becoming... that have been into Linux. Mm. The kind of the younger, yeah. Linux-y, hip nerds... like myself,
I could
are
it.
Now at a point in their lives and in their careers where they're old enough and experienced enough to be the CIOs.
I could see that.
To be the CTOs.
Well, I think
to
a lot
be the
of
VPs of engineering.
A lot of people in the .com, you know, when the .com servers hit, a lot of people were, you know, deploying Linux servers.
Yep.
And they, now that kind of popped. They probably have gone back up through the ranks now and sort of gotten to those positions. And yeah, I could see that.
Now they're heading the charge.
Solid theory, dude.
And so now, boom. It's back. It's back, baby.
Mm-hmm.
That's how it's going.
You know, I
and
like
so
it.
It's awesome. And so it's the great thing is I'm seeing this happen a lot, not just in servers. I'm seeing it happen on the desktops.
Oh, yeah,
I'm
yeah.
seeing it happen on dev workstations. I'm seeing it happen throughout the organizations. It's
I
awesome.
I would be very pleased to see a survey come out like this next year as well. I mean, I'd like to really see the growth continue like this. Now, if you're watching the video version, we have a graphic up on the screen, and one of the things it shows is also how much that operating system has seen relative decrease.
Yeah.
That's how on the video version here they have a red indicator, and you'll see that I think if you look at these numbers, we're still kind of mostly chewing up previous Unix market.
Interestingly, though,
but
I'm not seeing a whole lot of Haiku represented there. Same with Amiga OS.
Yeah.
I'm not seeing Morph OS represented
Herd's
properly.
It's just not quite ready to be put up on the graph
yet. It's just
it's
one
quite
step
there
below.
Yet. Almost
yeah.
ready to be.
Yeah,
right,
it's right,
almost,
right below.
Yeah.
Also, the QNX Neutrino desktop yeah. is just one step down.
Although we're really starting to bite away at the Windows market, too.
That's actually pretty... That's astounding to me. Now, I'm not seeing any Mac referenced in there.
Interesting.
I wonder if that's just, like, doesn't play into
did
most of the company's plans at all.
Did you see, like, the BlackPad, whatever that new BlackBerry, the PlayPad, whatever
oh, yeah.
it's called? That's
yeah.
running, that's going to be based on QNX.
Yeah, sitting on top of QNX.
What do you think of that?
I think that's awesome, dude.
Yeah, you're
dude,
a QNX fan?
Well, not really. Oh. But QNX is fine. It's like, if you haven't ever seen QNX, guys, they actually made a push into the desktop space, like... 10 years ago?
With a
QNX Photon. Or Phonon. Photon? Photon. I think is what they called it
I'll
at the time.
I'll see if I can find it.
Yeah, but it was a nice window manager on top of QNX. QNX as the kernel and Photon?
The Photon it was.
Yeah, the
Photon
QNX Photon GUI. Yeah, and it was pretty cool. It looked cool, and it was pretty groovy. I mean, this was a decade ago.
That's not bad for a decade ago.
Yeah, that's it. That's it right there.
Jeez, it looks a lot like GTK.
No, it kind of had a... It was like if you combined GTK and BIOS.
GTK
like
1 and BIOS.
If you smashed GTK and BIOS together, that's kind of what it looked like.
I could totally see that.
Yeah, it was pretty cool. But I mean,
actually kind of like the sidebar thing that this guy has going on in the screenshot.
Yeah,
that's
what it's... That's a default.
The shelf?
Look like, yeah.
Huh.
And they did great. I mean, so it's a great system. It's a fast kernel. It's stable. I mean, they run QNX in some really mission critical
yes.
enterprise sort of solutions. But it's pretty cool. So the fact that BlackBerry tapped that to be the basis for their next OS rollout, it means that BlackBerry actually cares
serious,
about doing
opinion.
Something.
They're serious, and
all.
I think it means it's gonna perform like an SOP. I think that thing is going to be one of the fastest tablets out there. I really think QNX is a great platform for speed.
Oh yeah, it's
I don't
awesome.
Know if the I don't know how well the device itself will actually do in the market. I think the Android devices are probably more likely to win that area. But we'll
Android's
see.
Doing awfully good right now, so it's going to be hard to...
I'm going to have to try to get your input here on this one, Brian, because I don't think I have anything of any intelligence
here's
thing to
what's
say.
Going to happen. Brian's going to go totally dark now. And this next
just
story
be the Chris show.
Is just Chris. All right,
so,
Chris,
So here I go. Aaron Saigo said something, which we like to cover here on the show.
Yeah.
You know, that's essentially what this news story is.
Yeah, Aaron Saigo said something.
What's actually of importance is that they say that they're planning to do a complete overhaul of Plasma and switching over to the new Qt Quick framework and QML backend. Eh? How was that? No, you got nothing? I think that was pretty good.
No, I'm totally dark. You know, you did a great job reading that headline.
Oh, yeah, Brian?
So, okay, a couple of things to point out here. Yeah. So this is the primary point here is to overhaul Plasma.
Make it faster.
To make it faster, more powerful on the KDE side of things. Now, there's some good and bad here.
Well, then one of the good things has got to be that it looks like the new framework they'll be using has support for hardware acceleration.
There we go. That's the big one. That's the big one. So now obviously it doesn't mean that every, you know, plasmoid widgeto OSIS is going to get massive hardware acceleration for all of its drawing right out of the gate. But it means that a lot of the functionality in it will be good candidates for adding hardware acceleration.
And this does mean, though, a total API breakage. Right,
at least some, yeah, yeah. QML is different. So now, theoretically, they could make it so that it doesn't have very much API breaking.
Well, I think that I'm referring over to an OSNews.com article here, and
good because OSNews.com never gets anything wrong. That should work great.
Well, here's why I like it though, because you know who's in the comments? Aaron Saigo. So he's in there, and he mentions that he's...
Wait. Before we do this, and Aaron, my apologies. Is he really long-winded in the comments?
Yes!
Dude!
Aaron,
I have a show where all I'm supposed to do is stare at a camera and talk for like an hour. You are so much more long-winded than I am. And I am full of hot air. Yeah. I am a giant gas bag of talking.
Yeah,
I mean,
right.
Half the stuff that comes out of my mouth isn't even important. But man, can Aaron Saigo of the KDE Project just yammer.
Well, here, I'll show you.
I'm not saying this in a bad way, dude.
I'll show you his comment.
Hats off.
So, and Aaron, we're impressed. We love your work. So here, this guy asks a two-line question, right? Aaron Saigo's response is quite lengthy.
I don't think Aaron believes in cut and dry responses.
Yeah, he's a good man like that.
You know, and I like that because if you really take the time and read through like his blog post, which will go on for like 40 pages, if I read a 2-page blog post, I get a little crap. They're like, oh, Brian, I got bored. Aaron Saigo will write like 40 pages, some odd thing, and you can just hear the entire internet falling asleep about halfway through.
Now, what he said though in his comment, and he would know, I'll talk about, I guess maybe we should mention who he is, but, one of the things he said in there is that they intend to have both, I don't know if you want to call them programming pathways or whatever, available while they get the new one going.
That makes sense.
So it's not going to be like a total breakage all over again where everything's broken.
Right. So that is the one thing is, honestly, KDE 4 has just kind of, over the last year in my mind,
started to get there.
Really, really gotten there. So I kind of hate to see a major breakage at this point.
Yeah, that's the thing. And I think that's what most people were worried about when they saw this news story. And that's definitely what the comments were. And that's what Aaron himself was responding to in the comments. So anyways, you can head over to Aaron's blog if you want to read more. It's A-S. I don't want to mispronounce misspell his last name. It's
E-I-G-O.
Yep. And .blogspot.com. And that's where he's blogging at, and you can read his thoughts on it and find out a little bit who he is. He's involved very directly with the KDE Project because he's like one of their lead guys.
And he's really good at using about 5 million words in a minute.
Now, I wanted to... This next story is a follow-up to the Pandora Project. You guys, not the music service. Stop it. No. No. It's the handheld device.
Hey, Chris.
Yeah?
Well, what are you doing
I was
there?
Telling them no, Brian. You have to draw the line somewhere.
I got to be honest.
Brian?
I don't... What were you...
This line, no farther, sir.
Okay.
All right?
All right.
Okay. Thank you.
I don't know that we...
Brian?
I'm sorry, dude.
The Pandora device has shipped its 900th device.
Oh, so they're really going mass market now.
Well, I guess they've had quite a few problems, you know, with their nubs. The little hand thumby nubs on
yeah,
the device.
Yeah, I have problems with my nubs sometimes, too.
They've had some problems with their nubs. They've also had problems with the housing and the logic board.
Yeah.
And it really sort of identifies what a small indie company is up against when you have the companies out there like Apple who are buying up all of the NAND flash and all of the glass for the screens and all of the metals and all
stuff. Wait, now is this 900 total or is this just this batch? They managed to ship 900.
Because
I don't think... I think they've shipped more than 900 total, right?
Well,
wait. Scroll down. Just shipped 900 more units.
Yeah. They might be talking about the batch. But see, here's the headline.
Sub-units.
The Pandora's 900th Linux handheld gaming unit ships.
All right. So they screwed that up. If you look down there...
Because they say the first three... although, this is... Well, I'm not sure. I'll read it during the break, and I'll give a clarification in the next segment. But
yeah,
I
can't tell. Either way, it's not
a
great deal.
I'll go to the Pandora website directly and see what we can find.
They haven't shipped a ton of them yet, is one of the takeaways. But I think they've shipped more than 900.
I think they...
I know. I sure as hell haven't gotten one myself.
I don't think so.
People, I would like one.
We'll see. Yeah.
That's the takeaway here.
I'm looking at
Brian
this.
Brian would really like one of these, please.
I'm looking at this, though, and my main concern is this is a really awesome little Linux gaming device, but one of the problems that they're having is that these devices are extremely hard for them to get manufactured correctly without a bunch of defects. And how do we now, at this point, with all of these other huge manufacturers, Motorola, HTC, and Apple, how can these guys...
Can't.
I know.
They can't compete. You know, I've looked into it a little bit because for a while I was like, you know, all these phones out there, they just don't suit me. I'm kind of a tinkerer.
Mm-hmm.
I want to tinker. And there's a lot of open source phone stacks available built on top of Linux that I can get and run. Now, if you look around, there's companies like Gumsticks and...
it's only 900 devices total.
Ooh, that's not good.
I know. I'm on their
like
site.
Gumsticks and a bunch of other like system on chip manufacturers where you can essentially go in and buy a complete, you know, all the parts you need to build your own phone. The problem is you'll end up spending twice as much oftentimes to build that phone than you would if you just went out and bought a really nice phone. So then what if you wanted to get one of those phones to market? So you buy all those parts, you assemble all the parts together, even buying in bulk, your total cost is going to be slightly more than the retail cost of your competition, which means you have to market up even more to earn anything.
And then you really have to be able to provide something amazing. And even once you hit that certain price point, you're too high.
So in order to bring it down even further, you really have to cut corners. You have to go with kind of shoddy manufacturing processes. You have to go with cheaper metals and plastics.
And it could be that...
And it's problematic.
It could be that they're, you know, they are holding the device to such a standard that when they're getting these devices, they're not meeting the standard. Some companies might be willing to ship them out, and they're holding them back to make sure they're meeting
the
standard.
I think that's cool. Yeah, that's very
cool. So I'm really hopeful that these guys are sort of almost re-blazing a whole new path, in a way, for the indie hardware manufacturer with this kind of... you know, not a huge already present market penetration. So I'm hopeful for them, and I'm going to keep watching the Pandora story because I did head over to their blog while you were yakking about that, and they did say 900 devices total on their blog.
That's not good.
I know.
That's not good. Well, I hope the manufacturing improves for them because I would like that.
All right, Brian. Now, this next story is one that you spotted and I think is really cool. The Nokia N900 now is going to be able to dual boot MeeGo operating system, like 1.0 and above, right?
Yep.
And, of course, the existing MAMO operating system that's already on the device.
Dual boot.
That's cool.
Now, it's going to be, it's kind of official. So it's official, but it's not meant for consumers. So it's mostly for us devs or, you know, power users or people really wanting to test this out.
Let me ask you this, Brian.
I would like you to ask me a question.
I'm going
to
put this out there, and I'm just going to ask you.
I'm going to answer it.
Okay. So... This device is I just talked about this at the beginning of the new segment. This device is an ARM CPU, and the Nokia devices running MeeGo are going to be x86.
Okay.
It seems like that's a different processor architecture. So why would you...
It does seem that way, doesn't it?
Is it more for just playing with MeeGo than it is for developing applications?
Well, it's totally for developing applications. There's no real difference. The API is the same. Libraries are the same. They're just recompiled for a different platform.
If you want to do something at the hardware level, wouldn't that? I mean, is there going to be some stuff you might run up against that might break on an ARM versus x86?
Not really. Not unless you're dropping down and doing machine code.
Okay. So really, you could get an application up and running on this guy, and then theoretically, they'll provide you a tool. And we've already covered a news story last week. They're going to provide an ARM to x86 translator.
Well, so the whole thing here is you're developing applications for Mego in Qt. So you're using Qt Creator as your development environment.
That's the bit I was missing.
And then you just simply compile it for the target platform. So whether it's ARM or x86,
it really
shouldn't matter to you as the developer all that much.
Okay.
You're just building it in Qt.
So there's going to be maybe like gaming circumstances. But other than that,
not even
like a 3D game, you think?
No, I mean,
really?
it's going to be the same deal as if you had an x86 that was more fast, that had better 3D performance than an older machine that was also x86. Same consideration.
Okay.
There's no ARM to x86, oh my gosh, the sky is falling sort of weird translation you got to do
good.
In that case. Because applications are all going to be written in either like C++ and C or probably like Python is what most applications are going to be written in.
Right.
So in those cases, what does it matter? It doesn't matter if it's ARM or x86, not to the developer. Anyway.
So you're going to do this? You're going to put Mego on?
Oh, heck yes. I'm going to dual boot the hell out of this sucker.
Are you?
Oh, hell yes.
So what
it's
do you think?
Got plenty of storage
for it. What would be the reason you wouldn't just stay in Mego all the time? Is maybe some app?
I don't know. Well, I see, that's the thing.
Got to be an app.
I might end up wanting to stay in Mego all the time. And realistically, that's the way forward. That's the route forward for this phone. Now, I love my N900. And I run MAMO on it right now, and it's fantastic. But Mego looks shiny and new.
Yeah.
And I like shiny and new. So I'm going to go with that. And I'm not going to single boot it. And I'm going to say this with all the love I got. What if it sucks?
Yeah, right. It could suck.
It could suck.
Yeah.
And I want to know after living with it for a while if it's going to suck. If it's awesome, I'm going to wipe that memo off there, and I'm never going
to
look back.
Well, I'm going to be really interested to hear what you have to say about it on the show.
We're going to find out. We'll do some sort of a review of it on the N900 in an upcoming episode. But that'll be after we review Arch.
I know. I'm sorry.
Chris.
It's embarrassing. All right, Brian. Well, that's all the news for this week.
Let's talk about OpenOffice.
All right, Brian. So you've probably caught in the news this week there was an anti-OpenOffice FUD video released by Microsoft.
It was hilarious.
It also takes quite a few pokes just at open source in general.
It does, but it's mostly just about OpenOffice.
Yeah. So what I thought we would do is, so that way everybody knows what we're going on here, we would roll it in the show because for the audio folks, there's actually it's all audio.
It's
I don't even know why
audio.
They made this a video.
I don't either.
Yeah, it's just stupid animated stills.
But
anyways.
It's kind of funny.
It's kind of funny.
I found it amusing.
So we have a response to this video, and we have some corrections that we'll make after we roll it for you. So go ahead and take a little listen to it.
We originally installed Linux-based PCs running OpenOffice to save money in the short term.
Oh, my goodness.
But we quickly found that the exorbitant cost and limited availability of support left us worse off.
What did you do?
I need something I can rely on. If an open-source freeware solution breaks, who's going to fix it?
Oh, no.
A hugely disproportionate 30% of our IT resources was required for a period of months to service open source. An estimated 25% of additional staff time was routinely required to install and maintain open source-based systems.
Military. When I was using OpenOffice.org, I was especially having trouble with macros not being supported enough. I was asking for help from the IT department. They evaluated my requests and suggested that I use Microsoft Excel.
We were accustomed to fielding calls from users in a bind due to difficulties with OpenOffice.org on a daily basis.
With OpenOffice.org, there was total uncertainty about the formatting of documents and also about their inconsistency when shared outside our production group.
Oh, I see what they did there.
Employees using OpenOffice.org weren't always capable of correctly making sense of documents arriving from outside the company and doing so with adequate security guarantees.
What?
OpenOffice.org 3.1 failed to deliver on its promise of better Microsoft Office interoperability, severely mangling our Microsoft Word and Microsoft Excel test data files.
I've had students who turn in files that they have converted
this
from OpenOffice with formatting problems. That affects their grade.
When I open a large spreadsheet, it can take 10 times longer in OpenOffice.org than Office Excel 2007.
Our employees were frustrated because OpenOffice and our overall IT environment prevented them from being more productive.
New employees lacked OpenOffice.org applications use skills that significantly increased the employee's adaptation period and
they put
adversely
of a baby
affected
on
their operational efficiency.
Our users' familiarity with the Microsoft Office interface and the uniformity of different application tools have minimized calls to the help desk.
This is a motion.
By using Microsoft Office 2007, we have reduced the internal support costs significantly because our staff is familiar with this system.
Oh, 2007.
This increases acceptance and job satisfaction.
The company paid too much for using OpenCode and OpenOffice.org software. Efficiency of operations was decreasing.
I don't necessarily agree that open source is a free product. There are always costs related to support, standardization, and compatibility.
When we returned to Microsoft Office after our experience with OpenOffice, you could practically hear a collective sigh of relief across the entire district.
Isn't that awful? So what'd you think of that?
That is the stupidest. I'm going to take these headphones off first. Kind of wanted to take them off halfway through the video because that was driving me a little bit crazy. So there's like 18 million things wrong with that video. I'm not going to go into the fact that half of the people in the video sound mildly retarded.
So
I'm not going to get into that.
That's an interesting thing about this video is that so the quotes, the lines in the video are played by actors. However, what they're saying
is real
from case study quotes,
right,
from case studies.
Study quotes,
and
know.
Microsoft always happy to provide the backup data for their video links to the case studies.
Yeah,
and these case studies, well, were done by Microsoft Research Corporation.
Yeah, no, I mean Microsoft Research did the case studies, got some quotes, and put it into a video. I get that. That's fine.
It's just the interesting That's way. Fine. It's interesting
There's
the way actors they decided to hire,
dude,
and
yeah.
how they read the lines.
They sounded mildly retarded.
They sounded like victims.
They did.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And the imagery
and
that they decided to use was over the top. And the sounds, and see, this is, if for the audio listeners, you can hear the music they played in that, and the sound effects they added really stand out in the audio version of the show. And that really is the dramatic undertone they try to put in the whole thing. And it's so over the top.
Yeah. My favorite part was when they had the little military people that looked, and
yeah.
like they had the marching sound that
yeah,
kind of
marching
was like,
band drums or whatever.
But it was like, vaguely Nazi-ish. Like I think that was the insinuation, was open source are military Nazis. Like, that was the insinuation I got out of it.
Hmm.
And I was kind of watching this thing. I'm like, seriously, okay. All right, so I thought we'd take a few minutes and just kind of pick apart legitimately. I mean, obviously, the video's way off base.
The video was, you know, what always strikes me, and this is the last, I think, maybe commentary I'll make on the video itself, is that Microsoft always seems to under-budget these things. You know, they always seem to hire actors and production companies who have a lower standard than you'd expect from a multi-billion dollar company like Microsoft.
Seriously.
And this is a cheap... The video is essentially the composite of a generic motion template with, you know, GarageBand loops added underneath it and then dramatic voiceovers done. I mean, it's a $15 movie. It's ridiculous.
It's cheap. It's cheap.
So, but one of the things, you know, what they really attack on in this video is the... support aspect, that it'll leave you high and dry and stranded if you don't use Microsoft Office.
So here's a couple of things I wanted to throw out. The first is, if we're really and legitimately comparing Microsoft Office to OpenOffice, let's start from the most basic level.
Okay.
Let's say, one, you download OpenOffice, and on one hand you do that. On the other hand, you go buy off the shelf a copy of Microsoft
and
Office.
And for businesses, it's actually for large businesses, a much more complicated procedure, because you have to buy an open license agreement with Microsoft,
right,
where you have to buy a minimum quantity of 5 copies of Office, and then what they do is they give you a digital download with a key,
exactly,
for your enterprise, or you have to buy the onesie-twosie copies at $400 a pop.
Right.
And either way, it's very complicated. You have to go through specific resellers to get stuff for business.
And you have to pay for support.
Yeah.
You have to pay for support for Microsoft Office. You have to pay for support.
It doesn't
support.
Come with free support.
If you have a copy of Microsoft Office and you have, my macros just aren't working great. I just don't like these macros.
Microsoft doesn't show up in their
fix your macros
in their nerdmobile for free.
They're not going to do that.
No.
They don't have those little bugs that are painted white and black that they drive around and go screech, and they don't have the nerd herd showing up going,
right,
okay, I'm going to fix your macros.
Right.
So Microsoft, the problems that they were calling out in the video, the support costs of potentially having broken macros, Microsoft doesn't help you with, even if They charge you. If you pay for support, that's not the support you get. You get support for application issues. Mm-hmm. You get support for document corruption
issues. You
would
have to do the same thing you have to do in OpenOffice, hire a consultant.
You hire a consultant. You get some of your IT staff to help you. Now, the issue that they were having in the video of, let's say you have a macro in Excel that somebody in the company made, and then you went over to OpenOffice, and it didn't work quite right. It needed to be modified. Of course, you can have a problem. It's a separate damned application.
Yeah, you didn't do your implementation of OpenOffice correctly. You should have tested for that stuff and converted the macros to the OpenOffice macro style.
What the case study really shows is a completely incompetent IT department that did not know what they were doing, did not know what software they were rolling out, and did a really piss-poor job.
You could make that same argument if somebody was on Lotus Notes or whatever you want to say, migrating to Microsoft Office.
Absolutely.
OpenOffice, you can actually buy support in support packs on like one incident basis from Oracle directly now.
Yeah.
This is something that Sun offered, and now Oracle's Open Office Support Premier Edition or something like that. You can buy these $40 chunks of support from Oracle, and I'll put a link to that in the show notes. And essentially, it's application-level support. And I think Microsoft's rate is over $100 an hour for support incidents. So at $40,
this is pretty cheap.
That's pretty good.
It's pretty cheap, and there's a lot of smaller firms, a lot of IT support firms that offer OpenOffice support.
Oh, my goodness. So what's funny is that I'm surprised Microsoft went down this route, because the OpenOffice project actually lists a consultant's directory on their website. Again, I'll put a link in the show notes. And you can actually go in here and put in your location.
You. Yeah.
Yep. Put in what country you're in, and then what state you're in, and what city you're in, and they will give you a list of the OpenOffice registered consultants in your area.
And the great thing is, if you go this route, one, this is my thumb. My thumb is counting number one.
Hey, nice thumb, Brian.
Thumb point means it's probably going to be a little bit cheaper than going through Microsoft, because they're smaller, hungrier firms that can operate in a leaner way. Pointer finger point, they're probably going to have more experience working with a variety of different document types and operating systems and office file formats, which means they'll probably know the potential issues you'll run into.
That's a huge point.
Middle finger issue.
Whoa, dude.
They'll be able to help you whether you're moving to or from OpenOffice, which means you'll be able to get the best solution for your business.
See, that's the thing. Even an Oracle support specialist or a Microsoft support specialist, they are going to be specialists in that product. They're not going to know all the ins and outs of each product. And you really need to know both ends of it in order to make a nice, smooth transition. And it's likely – so these research case studies that were done by Microsoft, it's likely that these IT companies either had an existing established relationship with Microsoft or reached out to Microsoft to get support. So they brought in Microsoft support specialists probably to get them back over to Microsoft Office or onto. So the results are going to be skewed from that perspective to begin with.
Of course.
Now, there's been a lot of news about LibreOffice and what's the future of OpenOffice and all that kind of stuff. And the timing of the release of this video is a little suspect, since it comes out during the Oracle purchase, while it's still new, all that kind of stuff. So Oracle came out and said, hey, nobody freak out. We're actually going to confirm that, yes, we are sticking with OpenOffice. We're putting our resources and our development resources and money behind it. We're going to be at the OpenOffice Developers Summit that's coming up, we're totally behind the Document Foundation. Even though it's a ripoff of OpenOffice, as I think they look at it, I think Oracle really does see it as that. They claim they're going to play nice.
Yeah.
We'll see. Now, you do have LibreOffice now from the documentfoundation.org,
I
believe.
It's a great name.
Yeah, and I'm going to check it out. I really, at this point, don't see a compelling reason to jump.
But here's the point.
But Open Document either way, right?
It doesn't matter if OpenOffice forks into 15 different splinters. As a business, you're going to evaluate it before you roll it out, which means if your business relies on 12 different specific spreadsheets, you're going to evaluate either what you need to do to make those spreadsheets work or whether or not those spreadsheets will just work out of the box on whatever new solution you roll out. You're not going to always update to the latest and greatest of every random fork of every piece of every app. If you go from Office 2003, say, to Office 2010, there's going to be some document compatibility issues. Now, Microsoft, they do a pretty good job of making sure the documents work from version to version.
They definitely try.
But if you have a lot of VBA and macros in there and it's really heavy, you're going to have some breakages. And it's totally fine. That's not Microsoft's fault for that, because we have some random script running in a macro somewhere that doesn't work between all the different versions. It's up to us to evaluate before we make the move.
Mm-hmm.
There's demo versions of Office available. We can try it out. The Open Office is free.
Free.
We can try it out. The IT guys for the companies should read the damned forums, should look around a little bit before doing these rollouts.
I really think you're right. I think it's the failing of the IT department.
It's terrible IT.
If I was to roll it out, I would do all of these pre-transition checks.
Yes.
I would have test control groups. I would try documents, especially ones that are important to internal office communication. These are all things you have to do before you roll out.
And you know when moving between office suites with different scripting engines, you're going to have issues.
And honestly, I haven't thought through this a lot, but my first place to start was you can get ODF plugins for Microsoft Office. So start getting people to work in the OpenDoc format.
Formats.
So then when you make that transition, you're not having these formatting issues.
It's a slider change. It's a lot of companies move to Linux in steps. You replace, and I've talked to a lot of people who had some really great ideas. Like, let's say you want to move from Windows and Microsoft Office and IE over to Firefox, Linux, and OpenOffice. Mm-hmm. Well, first of all, start by replacing the browser.
Totally.
Just one.
Roll that out on Windows.
And then start by replacing all of the icons on the desktop to, say, the Tango icons.
Yep.
Like an open-sourced icons format that you can use on both the Windows and Linux desktops.
Mm-hmm.
Once they're used to those icons, when you switch over to Linux,
it looks the same. Yep.
So
get OpenOffice deployed first.
Things.
Do Pigeon first if you can. Get all these things on Windows first and then move over. I wanted to give a quick call out to the chat room. JZA is in there. He's kind of my go-to OpenOffice expert. And he says that a lot of the people involved in the LibreOffice Document Foundation are actual Oracle employees. So that seems like a pretty strong endorsement from Oracle.
That's a lot of endorsement, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, that seems like that's pretty safe. It's not going to be that weird of a situation there.
And one thing to note, the support of VBA and macros going from Windows Office to Mac Office, it's not great.
Dude, it's not great going from 2007 to Office 2010 on Windows with Microsoft Office.
So the thing is, if you're making a move between versions, between total products, you're going to have compatibility issues. These sorts of videos, it's not even FUD. It's just dumb. It's just like anyone who is in IT just cocks your head to the side and goes, really? Mm-hmm. So what you did is you just pointed out that someone didn't do their job and then literally put out a video.
Spotlighted that.
Put their name on it, the company they work at, and basically just said all these IT people failed to do their jobs miserably. Mm. Not even kind of didn't do good. Did a terrible job.
It really is, dude. It's spotlighting their failure.
I would be pissed. Like, honestly, if Microsoft came and did a case study and they were like, let's move you between all these things, and I had 1,000 great things to say about OpenOffice. And I had one bad thing.
They took that one bad thing.
OpenOffice has some flaws. Mm-hmm. It's not perfect.
Mm-hmm.
I use it and I like it and it's my preferred office format and office system, but it does have some flaws. So I'd tell you like it is. I'd tell you here's the couple of issues.
There will be some formatting problems.
And then they took that out of context, stuck it in a video.
And it has formatting problems.
Yeah, I'd be super pissed.
Yeah.
I'd be so pissed.
Now, my bet is like in the case, like they end on a really dramatic school district shot with this guy who's, when we switch back to Microsoft Office, everybody's anxiety level went down and they have like this hallelujah pose this guy is doing, right? And that in those circumstances, I'm sure that's like I've seen Microsoft come in and just donate Office.
Chris.
Yeah.
You want to scroll up for a minute. I need to point something out. The chat room is having an excellent discussion
right
Jayden
now. Oh, Jaden there? You like Jaden's comment?
Brian has the best view about everything ever. No exceptions. get Brian rolling and he is hard to stop.
That's a good one, dude.
This is just a great reason why you listening and viewing the Linux Action Show should really view us live.
Yeah.
Every Sunday at 10 a.m. because, these are the sort of great discussions that you can be a part of.
Well, like I've always said, if you want a longer Linux Action Show, you get like a two and a half, 3 hour show if you tune in live sometimes.
I've been
crazy.
Rambling for the last 2 hours.
I know.
I don't know what I've said so far. I don't know what I've said on the show, let alone off the show.
Hey, you know what? So I think let's end here. I'll just say go to the show notes if you want the links for the support for OpenOffice, some of the counterclaims. And
so if you're in a business and they're doing the same evaluation and they point to these case studies that Microsoft put out, throw them over to the consultant list over at OpenOffice. Let them watch this part of the Linux Action Show. I know we're a little bit, happy-go-lucky and laissez-faire here, but the reality is, Chris, how long have you been doing the IT thing?
Forever. Like 14 years
This is
now.
Your thing. Now, you've done it in businesses. You've done it as consultants. consulting, and you've done it in schools.
Yep.
You've done it all over the place.
Yes, sir.
So you know this.
Mm-hmm.
And
I'm telling you, this is an IT implementation.
It's crap. Yeah. So seriously, just show it to people. Let people know that this is just, it's not even FUD. It's just inaccurate, poor use of information.
I totally think so.
I mean, these case studies by Microsoft, they could be great. They could be filled with awesome information.
They could be helpful information.
But what's being released right now is not helpful.
And that's why it's FUD.
It doesn't do anything.
That's why it's FUD. If it was something that actually, like in the BuzzFeed, when this story was, when I flagged the story, you know, there was a lot of comments in the BuzzFeed and people said, hey, I legitimately tried to switch and I had formatting issues.
Of course.
That'll come up and we're not saying they're not problems.
Oh, yeah. There may be situations where you should not switch to OpenOffice. It could be.
Maybe.
But evaluate, find out for yourself, and pick the right solution. Don't base it off of some video where it's like, oh, my gosh, free software is not free.
It has real cost, Brian.
Yeah, my favorite, OpenCode.
OpenCode.
OpenCode. Yeah, OpenCode isn't really that free. Open code is not that free.
No.
I don't think so.
No,
seriously.
I don't
so
really think
one,
that.
The person doesn't even know the words that you would use at all.
Right.
So the person's probably not in IT.
No. And you know what also means they were scrounging for quotes.
Yeah. So that means that if they used those quotes, they had nothing.
I know.
That means that honestly, the rest of the codes were probably, oh man, OpenOffice, yeah, it was really easy to move to.
You know, we
the
did
UI
that.
Was really easy to learn. It opened like 99% of the documents.
Well, and here's
really
the reality. Hard. And I've thought about this aspect of it. If you did run into, like this, one of the quotes in there is 30% more IT services time. Well, whatever that means, but 30% of what?
I don't know.
Of what? I don't, anyways, so. Yeah, there's going to be more upfront transition time. That will happen. The UI is different. People have to retrain their brain
and
where to click.
To a different app.
Yeah, totally. And so that's going to happen, but you have to factor in the fact that there's an upfront investment of that transition time. Maybe that'll take you 6 months, honestly, to work out all of the kinks and solve everybody's heartburn.
Big business and everything. Yeah.
Yeah, totally.
It happens.
But that means from that point forward, you will never buy Microsoft Office again.
Or pay for the support costs or any of that
stuff.
Yeah,
I mean, it's just...
I'm sorry, but it is cheaper.
When you factor it's $400 per workstation for Microsoft Office,
dude,
and you need to buy it every couple of years in order to be compatible with the rest of the industry,
yeah,
that is a huge freaking amount of money.
Huge.
And you know why Microsoft Office is widely deployed? Because every company always steals most of it. Like, they get the eOpen license, and they buy, you know...
And they use way more than they're allowed
to use. They try to buy the right amount first. The first time they go through, they buy, oh, yeah, we'll get all our computers covered. But they add more computers, or they get rid of computers, or they don't take it off stuff. And everyone always violates that. Microsoft knows. I've talked to people at Microsoft. They know. They figure it's their cost to get Office to be the main used Office suite. They feel it's an upfront investment. Just like they lose $100 on every Xbox 360 they sell.
It's the way. I can't count. I mean, I've worked at so many
companies
now.
Same with Photoshop, right?
I've worked at big companies. Big ones that you would probably buy a lot of things from fairly often over the years, where the XP licenses, the Office licenses, all of them were site licenses that they didn't have enough numbers for anymore. So the ones that they put down in front of me on my workstations were all, they weren't legit.
No.
Not technically. So, no. I mean, it's, come on.
I know.
Come on. So really, what these companies all need to do is they need to sit down, do an internal audit, make sure that they're purchasing enough to be legal, purchase Microsoft, you know, the high-end support for all of them, then go out, install free Linux, free OpenOffice, and go and find one of their local providers that you can find on the OpenOffice.org page, buy support packages from them, and then compare prices.
Seriously. I like it, dude. All right, well, that's our look at the anti-OpenOffice FUD campaign on the Linux Action Show.
We did it. All right, that brings us to the very end of this show. This is the tail end. This is the capper. This is the...
The caboose, Brian.
We got to a point. So up on the shelf of the Linux Action Show.
Yeah, I like that
On the left-hand side is the head of a gargoyle.
Yeah.
And there's some books. We already did all the books.
Mm.
We're moving to the right.
What's at the end of the
books? Books. A big stone gargoyle's butt. So when you squish them together, full gargoyle, pull it apart, gargoyle
bookends. Can we call that
the gargoyle
Can we
butt.
Call that the gargoyle's caboose? For just today? We can go back to butt next week.
No. You know what?
What?
From here on out,
Yeah?
Gargoyle Caboose.
All right.
Stone Gargoyle Caboose of Power, right at the end of the show there.
Now, I know that probably a lot of you out there want us to talk about LibreOffice some more. And look, it's early. We're going to wait to talk about LibreOffice for a little bit. It's too soon. It's too soon. I really think so. I feel like anything we'd say, we would just get so much corrections
and comments.
They're
still getting set up, man.
I know. I want to see.
They haven't been around that long.
And I know LibreOffice isn't even their like long-term name. Possibly they're talking about trying to get Oracle to release the OpenOffice name.
Yeah, let's give those guys a little time to settle it. There's a lot of stuff happening in the Linux world right now to talk about, so we just don't need to focus on
that. There's a lot of stuff happening over at Radical Breeze these days, sir.
No, I don't think so.
No?
I don't think anything has happened over Radical Breeze.
Nothing new at all with Illumination Software Creator?
Oh, yeah. Illumination Software Creator 2.2 came out with the ability to build custom blocks so you can expand the functionality of your Android, Python, or Flash applications. And Illumination Software Creator 3.0 is going to hit beta now with a new platform that we've talked about in the past that I'm not mentioning right now, but it's a large one. And also new features that I'm not going to talk about right now, but actually, I haven't talked about most of them, but they'll be surprising.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah, it's very exciting.
That's in the 3.0 beta?
That's the 3.0 beta. That'll be rolling out here pretty soon. It's tons of fun. It's tons of fun is what's going on. We got a new forum. Oh, dude, the forum I was using?
Yeah.
Totally sucked.
Were you using vanilla?
I was using the...
It was a new one.
WordPress.
The WordPress one, yeah.
Yeah. It's like, like bulletin board press or something like that.
It was kind of an experiment, right?
It was an experiment. People were having problems getting their passwords back. File attachments weren't possible.
Which would be nice because people could attach their project.
Yeah, I mean, people want to build things, and they're like, hey, everyone, take a look at this.
Totally.
You couldn't attach files. So I just blew it away, and it sucked because we lost like tons of posts and all these user accounts. We had like 800 users registered in there, and those are all gone now.
Sorry,
you have to re-sign up. Sorry, everybody.
What are you using now?
PHP BB.
Yeah, the go-to, right?
You know,
I know.
We tried to stay away from it in Jupyter Broadcasting, but it works, and it's so supportive.
And look how long it's lasted us now. It's lasted us way longer than the vanilla installation.
Yeah, the vanilla's cool.
I know,
it's
right?
It's cool, but
vanilla
it's
good.
Just, so we got a new forum in there. That's pretty rad. That's all hipping and happening.
So where do they go to find out more about?
Go to radicalbreeze.com for all the good stuff. And if you want to be up to date on all the betas and everything, go to blog.radicalbreeze.com. That's where we roll out all the beta releases and give you all the good stuff. And remember, you can buy it for whatever you want to pay for it. So go do that.
And it's surprisingly easy to do so. There's a huge buy now button on your site.
There is. And then there's a slide. It's right in the middle, too.
Yeah.
It's right in the middle. Yeah. It's a different color.
It lights
up. Highlights as if from powers above. Maybe you should do that. Maybe that's the recommendation that's happening. Oh, look at that. Oh, you want it?
$100, sir.
Come on now.
$100.
Most dev tools cost more than that.
True.
And most dev tools don't support Python.
Now I can slide, but what
Java,
if I, you're really not going to be mad, you're not going to be mad at me if I slide this thing all the way down to the $5?
No, come on. Oh. The thing is, I want you guys using this thing.
Oh, that's true.
That's all that matters.
I got you.
We're trying to support the development on it, but the big thing is this needs to be used.
Yeah.
This needs to be used because this is damned important. It's important. It's not like this is just some random little game thing. This isn't some random little note-taking app or a fart app for your Android or iPhone. This is a freaking change to the development process and making it possible to make software for multiple platforms on multiple platforms in a variety of languages completely visually for anyone. Five-year-olds can make software with this sucker. Five-year-olds, I say.
I like it.
You know why I can say that? Five-year-olds have.
Really?
Yes.
That's cool.
Not a lot of them. Like two. Whatever. Like, I've heard about two of them, though.
But
That's two.
Put them together,
that's
ten.
A 10-year-old.
Yeah, that's a 10-year-old.
You subtract them from each other, that's a 0-year-old.
Yep.
That's math right there.
That is
fundamental. That's how that works. So, JupyterColony.com,
that's our
forum. Blah, blah, blah.
Jupyter Colony would be a good spot if you have feedback on OpenOffice and your experiences with it. You can leave in the comments, too. Now, like Brian mentioned earlier in the shizzle, that's my hip way to say show, Brian. We do this live over JupyterBroadcasting.com/live. And the best way to find out
so you just take the first two letters of the word show, chop the rest off, and add izzle.
What I'm hoping is that you'll be able to just do a quick substitution in your head.
See,
because you might want to go over to the Facebook izzle. No.
Fizzle?
Jupyter Broadcasting on Facebook izzle.
Wouldn't it be the fizzle slash...
Yeah. Fabizzle
slash...
Jubizzle.
No, it'd be Jizzle.
No, it wouldn't be Jizzle.
Jupyter Broadcasting. No, you cut off everything after the first concert set, and then add
it's not Jizzle, Brian.
All right, all right. You guys got all the details. There's also Twitter. You guys know what to do. Yeah. Come on.
Yeah,
come on,
guys.
Oh, and
go subscribe to some of the RSS feeds, would you? Would you help us out and subscribe to some of the RSS feeds?
Yeah, throw a dog a bone. All that good stuff. If you missed it, last week we did the Ubuntu review. We got a lot of reviews coming up. We're going to be doing Arch.
Yes, sir.
We're
excited about Arch.
All sorts of stuff. We got to be looking at all. There's a lot of distros coming along.
I know.
And a lot of cool apps.
Also, I'm wondering if people are interested in a real in-depth look at the Fog imaging product. I know that's really niche, so I want to ask you guys first. But you know Ghost, right? You can do like Ghost Cast, like if you have multiple computers in your house.
I know.
Or whatever, you can just click on one, hit a button, and Ghost will send out a whole image to it. Well, Fog lets you do that for free, and I've done an in-depth look on it real briefly. But I was thinking about really doing like this look at backing up your computers and reinstalling them using Fog over the network from one Linux box in your house or your business, wherever. If people are interested, let me know in the comments or in the colony somewhere, and maybe we'll do that.
And we're also looking at doing a very game-focused show coming
up.
So if you have a favorite game that you would like to hear about, go to Jupiter Colony, go to the forum, talk about it in there. That's the place to do it. Emails are great. Twitters are great. The thing is, if you do it over in the forum, that brings other people in. They can talk about their games.
Have to be an open-source game this time, but it just has to be able to run on Linux.
Has to be able to run on Linux.
Yeah.
And under Wine is okay. I prefer Linux native.
Yeah.
Or Java.
If it's an amazing game, maybe we'll do it. But if it's a Windows game, you have to use Wineware. Maybe you're not likely to do it. I don't know. We'll see.
Well, it's amazing. We'll try Linux native first.
Yeah.
Commercial, open source, doesn't matter. But Linux gaming. That's what we'll look at.
All right, everyone. Well, thanks so much for tuning in to this week's episode of the Linux Action Show. And we'll be back next week.